Burke, Payne and Wollstonecraft. From 1789 to 1815, events in France stimulated intense political debate within Britain and revived some of the radicalism and popular conservatism that had emerged earlier during debates about the American Revolution, for example. The revived radicalism of the 1790s had much in common with the reform movement of a decade or more earlier, but the stimulus of the French Revolution did produce some changes. The movement spread further down the social scale and was influential in a much wider geographical area. Most radicals, though, still campaigned for a programme of parliamentary reform based on historic rights of Englishmen rather than a new liberal ideal. The debate began in 1789 when Richard Price, a Unitarian minister, preached a sermon commemorating the Glorious Revolution in 1688. In this sermon, he congratulated the French National Assembly for opening up new possibilities for religious and civil freedom. The responses to this sermon are perhaps better known than the initial sermon itself. Edmund Burke, appalled at the substitution of the rights of man for the rights of kings, responded with his reflections on revolution in France. He argued the overthrow of authority in France would bring chaos and disorder. He himself saw his views as moderate. He often defended reflections, claiming its central theme was a justification of gradual reform. He maintained that reform in France should recognise that Europe was already improving. Burke regarded the French Revolution as a consequence of the interaction of three interests, the literary cabal as represented by Rousseau, Voltaire and the other philosophers, the politicians who wished to build France into a world power and considered the best way of doing this was via a republic, and the government of Louis XVI, who aided the revolutionaries' cause. However, he foresaw that France would deteriorate into a military government and suggested that the nations of Europe, in defence of their own interests, should launch a preemptive invasion of France to restore the old order. There was a tremendous stir caused by Burke's pamphlet, and it mustered many radicals into launching a counterattack. Mary Wollstonecraft, in her pamphlet A Vindication of the Rights of Men, published in 1790, presented Burke as a former reformer, grown old and confused, basically a good man, but one corrupted by the English establishment. She criticised Burke's sympathy for the women of the displaced aristocracy in France as selective, ignoring the many more thousands of women who suffered under the old regime. However, she did support his gradual approach to reform. She followed up this argument with another response in 1791, A Vindication of the Rights of Woman. Here she extended her arguments about the need and value of female emancipation. The other major response came from Tom Paine. The Rights of Man was written as a defence of the French Revolution and its principles. But the Rights of Man was more than a vigorous answer to Burke's arguments. It was also a statement of the philosophy of all democratic movements and is perhaps the fundamental text of modern democracy. In 2 years, it sold over 200,000 copies, making Paine the best-known revolutionary writer of his age. It was written in two parts. The purpose of part one was to refute Burke, but part two set out a far more radical agenda. In part one, Paine made a distinction between absolute monarchy and constitutional monarchy, but by part two he was maintaining that all traditional forms of government were creatures of imagination. By contrast, only republican rule by the people was essential. Paine also advocated the abolition of all monarchy. and the establishment of democratic republics based on universal manhood suffrage. Much of the historiographical debate about the impact of the French Revolution has been informed by E.P. Thompson's masterly thesis, The Making of the English Working Class. Thompson viewed the 1790s as a crucial period for the formation of working class political consciousness. Because of the proliferation of popular radical societies and the ideology of Paineite radicalism, which legitimised working class struggle. Thompson also supported the thesis that the radical societies had at least the potential for revolutionary activity. He argues they did not wither and die during the repressive 1790s, but merely transferred their activities underground. So he concluded that the 1790s had seen something like an English Revolution of profound importance in shaping the consciousness of the post-war working class. Some of the most radical responses were in Scotland, partly because of the narrowness of the Scottish franchise, but also because of the well-developed intellectual and political culture in Scottish cities. But there was also an important provincial dimension of popular radicalism, notably in Sheffield and the newly industrialised areas of the Welsh Valleys. There is much debate about the objectives of these radical societies. Mostly, the reformers used moderate, legitimate tactics. However, faced with an increasingly repressive government, popular reformers had few options open to them. The crushing of the London and Scottish conventions, for example, was followed by the two acts of 1795, one of which, the Seditious Meetings Act, cut the radicals off from their only means of mass agitation and propaganda. In some respects, the conservative reaction to the revolution sprang from the same cause as the radical movement, a pride in the supposed historic liberties and constitution of the British people. The sheer scale of the Loyalist movement during these years, though, was without precedent in the 18th century. Loyalist clubs and societies, the exploitation of the press and the pulpit to disseminate conservative propaganda, the organisation of public meetings, the creation of volunteer companies and other armed defence associations swamped the radical groups, and together with repressive measures of the government helped drive them underground. Burke's ideas were reinforced by scores of other writers and propagandists, including William Paley, Hannah Moore, and John Reeves, all supporting Burke's denunciation of universal natural rights and justifying the existing order by appealing to utility, morality, natural law, religion, and history. Most texts were designed to appeal to a mass audience and win them round to a patriotic defence of British institutions. For example, Hannah Moore wrote a series of cheap repository tracts, which took the form of a series of moral fables advocating compliance, obedience, and patriotism. They sold over 2 million copies between 1795 and 1798. Conservative newspapers and periodicals outnumbered and outsold similar literature produced by the radicals. The Crown and Anchor Association also published around 50 different tracts and distributed them amongst its network of provincial associations. But perhaps more important than this printed literature was the support given to the conservative cause by the clergy, who disseminated conservative and patriotic propaganda in their weekly sermons. There are a huge number of Loyalist addresses, resolutions and petitions sent to the King in the years between 1789 and 1815. These addresses were far more numerous and more geographically and socially widespread than those organised by radical groups. The legacy of the French Revolution was that it made a lasting impact on popular opinion in British society, of both a conservative and of a radical character. Debates about the closeness of Britain to revolution during this time have concentrated on the radicals, but loyalism too could be a revolutionary force, as is shown by the example of Ireland in this period. The revolution witnessed for the first time all sections of the population entering politics in some form, whether they supported the radicals and brought copies of Paine's Rights of Man, or whether they signed loyal addresses to George III. They were all participating in the political process and being incorporated into mainstream politics. Leading politicians of the day now relied upon favourable public opinion to maintain themselves in power, and politics could never be the same again. This was a backdrop to the parliamentary reform movement of the early 19th century.